from failure, I've learned how to get back up, how to continue, how to become better, how to improve. I think my biggest advantage as a creator is that I'm me, very authentically. I'm the only me, so the art that I create is art that only I can create. The ideas that come to me are ideas that only come to me and come through me.
Welcome to the Idea Generation Podcast, a show about creative entrepreneurship. My name is Noah Callahan Bever, and each week I'll be speaking with some of the most innovative ideators in culture and trying to figure out how they make their creative decisions. This podcast is brought to you by the good people at Shopify. Feeling that entrepreneurial itch? Turn your passion into a business with Shopify. They've got everything you need to start, run, or grow your business. Check out shopify.com/idea to learn more. In 2018, a Vallejo, California native had an idea. The Russell Thomas had been rapping as a hobby since before high school, though he never took it too seriously. But that was all about to change. After taking up a 9-to-5 to support his household and his newborn daughter, LaRussell's rapping hobby became the central preoccupation of his free time. Feeling like this was his best shot at a better life for himself and his family, LaRussell started to piece together what would become his first album, The Field Effect. How did your parents' professional life inform your ambition?
I don't think their professional life had too much impact on my ambition. I mean, other than like presence, you know, if they were able to be here or at work. They're not in like professions that kind of align with mine currently. Like my dad has always like worked, but also like hustled just like in terms of independence. I've always seen him be very independent and run his own business. So watching that definitely like inspired me and just things that I didn't even realize, you know, subconsciously, the way that me and my team work is like a replica of things he used to have us do in terms of like assembly and product, even quality of product. Like he was really into movies and music and things like that. So like he just had great product packaging and representation and the way he communicated with people, you know, he really built relationships with the people that he did business with and things like that. But I got to really see the grind of someone like just building, you know, their own empire through everything. And you know, he sold everything, like Clippers and products, just like he was just a hustler.
Tell me a little bit about your family life growing up.
I have a very Black American upbringing, like the culture. You know, I noticed that a lot of my friends have a very similar upbringing. We have a lot of the similar things in our house when it comes to like carpets and rugs that our grandparents used to have and pictures and like backgrounds and pictures. Like we share common place. A lot of our parents went to the same clubs and things like that. So you see a lot of that common stuff. But I have three sisters. I'm the youngest and the only boy.
What was the dynamic of being the sort of baby of the house?
It was cool. I really got to kind of establish like my own independence. I feel like I was always in my own world, my own group of friends. I didn't really have to share, you know, too much. So it was cool.
Was music an important part of the household?
Definitely. Just always. There's always music going on. You know, every trip in the car is music in the house in the mornings, just constantly parties. We were a party family. So it was always some parties, always some music. Soul, funk, R&B, hip hop, blues.
And when did you notice that you felt particularly drawn to music?
It's been forever. It's been forever. Like, you know, I've always loved just the feeling, you know. When I was in elementary school, one of my friends used to, like, beat on tables, and I used to freestyle and rap, and I was always writing in notebooks. I used to have this boom box, you know, we put CDs in and just rap over the beat, line wire, instrumental. So I was always kind of interested, but I really like dove in more towards high school, like getting on a serious level, but I was always interested from the jump.
Who were the artists that you were listening to that was inspiring you to want to write?
Kanye West was like a big inspiration. He inspired me to just produce, to want to make beats. Tupac early on, you know, because everything felt different. DMX, you know, as a kid, it was all the artists that's on the radio. 50 Cent, you know, everyone that you hear on the radio, that's what you take to until you could find and establish your own liking.
As you started to get, you know, through high school, you became a little bit more serious about music. Were you at the time considering other job opportunities or other disciplines?
Yeah, definitely. Like, even in high school, like, I was serious in terms of, like, I would come home and make beats and I would write more raps, but I wasn't serious in the sense of, like, this is my career, this is all I'm gonna do. So I still went into, like, the work field after high school and got a few jobs to just, you know, there was a point where I wasn't really focused on music at all. I was just working and just trying to, you know, navigate life and get through life. And then it kind of came back probably around, like, 2014, 2015, where it was like, let me put a little bit more effort into it. And then even then, I just kept kind of working as I was building that. And then in 2018, 2019 is when I was really, like, ready to jump. For a long time, I wasn't really, like, too much showcasing my art, you know? Like, I dropped some things in high school, and then I kind of went into, like, a refinement for a couple years and just was just making stuff, you know? Not making stuff that I wanted to show that I was happy and excited to share, but I was just making things to... I just enjoyed making music.
What was the content of that stuff?
All over. It was really me finding myself. Like, I got a lot of songs early where I sound like Kendrick. You could hear, like, the Kendrick influence or the Eminem influence or the Drake or the Cole influence. So I was really just trying to be everything, like a melting pot of everything, all of my favorites, and trying to figure out how they did what they did and just whatever I was influenced by at that time.
You get out of high school and you start thinking about getting a regular job. What did you get into?
My first job was at UPS. I ended up being, like, a seasonal helper, and I was, like, the introduction into workforce. That was my first time getting a check and things like that. I ended up going to FedEx from there, doing, like, warehouse distribution. I went to a winery after that, doing, like, distribution production, and then I landed in aerospace doing production and then eventually doing, like, contract admin stuff.
Can you tell me a little bit about the winery?
So wine was interesting, very intriguing. Like, it was a completely... Everything was new for me because I was new into the workforce, but I always knew, like, I never wanted to do, like, fast food or, like, just too much customer interaction work, you know? I wanted to just be able to work. So I got into that, and I was able to kind of just grow a little bit and, like, learn things, you know? I pick up very fast from experience. So I was able to kind of maneuver there, and once I got to a point where I felt like it was just no longer serving me, you know, I kind of left and started looking for something new, which landed me into the aerospace side. And I was just doing production type work there, shipments and packaging things on that end. And eventually I got to move up to the admin side, which is more so like you get to kind of see how the business operates, how they sell things and who they sell to and how the money looks on that end. It's like a completely different ball game from production.
While you're doing that, was there a specific reason that you sort of turned back towards music?
I just loved it. And I released an album in 2018 called The Field Effect, my first album. It started getting like just, it was getting reacted to very well. You know, people were showing a lot of love. And it got to a point where I'm like, well, let me share it a bit more. You know, I start sharing it to people at work and they loved it. And eventually I was like, I'm going to throw a show. I just decided one day I was going to do a show. I feel like people love the album. So we started getting into that. And one day we were at the park and a car passed by and it was playing the intro to the album. And it was like a crazy moment of just like reassurance. It was like, this is what you need to be doing. So that was like, that was the big moment. That was like, all right, let's go all in.
How many years leading up to releasing that album in 2018 did it take of you deciding, all right, I'm gonna start seriously making songs and pushing towards some goal here?
Oh man, from high school till then. And I think the whole time I kind of subconsciously knew, you know, I knew what I wanted to do and where I was going. My product just wasn't where I wanted it yet. But the whole time I knew that I could get there, but I was just kind of building.
Do you think that time working a 9-to-5 has been crucial to setting you up to be where you are now?
Definitely, because it shows you how invested you are. If you're willing to work a 9-to-5 and work overtime and then come home and build your own company, then you'd be willing to build your own company alone, you know, without that as well. But it definitely molds you and it teaches you to kind of like lock in and stay focused. It's very hard to give yourself to a company for 8 hours and then come home and still give yourself the best of you too.
Around the same time you have your daughter, how did that impact your ambition and thinking about life and your future?
In every way. It kind of just, it makes you want to be successful. Like, you know, you want to succeed. You feel like a heavier sense of responsibility and and things like that. You just want to be a little bit better than you are.
Tell me about the period leading up to the release of this first album. There's quite a bit involved, first in creating the piece of art, the mixing, the mastering, all of that stuff, and then figuring out how to get it up onto all the streaming platforms. How did you educate yourself on all of this?
So prior to that first album, I've already released music. I used to always release songs and singles with like the homies and my friends, just never any solo work. But I always kind of release music with people jointly to kind of get my feet wet and kind of jump off the ledge, but have someone with you, you know, for safety. So through that process, I got to experience going through the TuneCores and going through the AWOLs and the DistroKids and learning that side of it. So by the time I got to my album, it was a little bit more smooth. But when I got to my album, I still didn't understand publishing and master splits and things like that. You know, I still had no idea of the business side of it. I just knew how to get my art on iTunes and Spotify.
When did you open your LLC?
2019, so after I quit my job, that was like one of the first things we did was get the LLC established and create a business bank account and start getting things of that nature set up.
On the strength of a growing local fan base and his knowledge of distribution, LaRussell doubled down on his art and pursued his recording career full time. However, his approach to music and the business behind it was unlike anyone else in the industry. How long from the release of that album until you started getting inbound interest from different players in the music industry?
Kind of sporadically throughout, different people showed interest, but it wasn't until last year that we start really getting label offers and calls from people of status within the industry. The 2021 freestyle went viral. I had paid for a Rap Marathon post, and Wallow seen it on Rap Marathon, and then he reposted, and then it just started a whirlwind, and then Charlamagne reposted, and Russ found it on TikTok. Everything start kind of clicking simultaneously after that. It was already going viral prior, so like that was one of the pieces of content that every time we posted it, it did very well. It was well received, so we decided to kind of get behind it a little bit more, and it worked in that sense.
Thus far, you've done everything independently so far. Why is that?
I just had to. You know, like, I had to. I also live in a region where it's not like LA or New York, where we have all the resource here to amplify your career, or you could just kind of be in studios and figure out your way. Like, there's nothing here. So we had to build everything that we use, all of our tools in terms of production, audio, we had to build it in-house. So I was already kind of building those processes, so all I had to do was really find extra people to help me to do it. So after the first album, I think we dropped with like a music video that I had my homies come and help me shoot, and I edited myself on my computer and graded, and we put it out, you know? So after that, we started establishing like merch. We knew we wanted to do a show, and it's like, we're gonna do a show. We gotta sell some clothes. So I bought heat presses. We end up starting the merch side of it. My thing is always, if I can do it, you know, figure out a way to do it. And I didn't want to have to wait. You know, it comes with lead times and you got to wait. Like when I want something done, I want it done immediately. So it just allowed me to be able to maneuver in a way that I want to. I never want to wait on anyone or be hindered because someone else didn't do their job. Every piece, everything you see from like Good Company or you hear received from Good Company, I've seen or touched, it's in my house. My team touches it. If it's dropped to the post office, my mom takes it, the homies take it. Everything here, it's like, it's not coming from nowhere else. There's some people who support so much, they buy so much merch that sometimes I'll see their name, it's like, we could throw them extra, hook them up with a package. Like, you know, it's just a realer experience. We connect with these people.
How do you think about both your songwriting and also the album formation? Because the volume of material that you're putting out is pretty prodigious at this point. You got three albums so far in 2022, and it's June now.
Man, the songs write itself, you know, like the as life goes, that's the very easy thing for me is to write songs because I just have to talk about what's happening in life. And so as long as life is going, I'll have a song to go along with it for a soundtrack, you know?
So you put out the first record in 2018. It starts to get a little bit of traction. Where did that initial pull come from?
The hood. It started. That was the first, like, all of my first fans is literally people I went to high school with, people who live locally, who my pops passed a CD to, or my mom. And, like, I really got embraced by home very early in that first go-around. My first show, you know, it was about 130, 140 people, and it was a lot of Vallejo.
And were you in the back end of Spotify and these, you know, the different streaming platforms, looking at the streams and monitoring how the songs were
Definitely.
Performing?
I was heavy into data at one point. Now I don't really care as much for it, but I was heavily into data in the beginning because, you know, it was new, and being able to see where people are and how they're reacting to your stuff was, like, very interesting. But that data is also so skewed, like, when you know and you understand how it's not truly reflective of what you could do or how capable, you know, because you could have 100,000 monthly listeners, but if you're on several playlists, those listeners aren't listening to you. They just happen to hear a song that you made. So that's not reflective of the people that may show up to your show or the people that may buy merch. You know, some of these people aren't even interested. You could just have a feature, and that's why you have all these monthly listeners. It's not always representative of what's happening with an artist or their impact or what they're really doing, their true base.
Were there inflection points as you're watching that first record start to go and to grow? You notice it popping off in certain markets or growing in leaps and bounds or in ways that surprised you?
Not necessarily. Everything was new. Everything was new. So it's like, it's always dope to see someone listening to your music in, like, an off city, like a Modesto or Fresno, where you don't often see artists tour, you know, but you're seeing them show up in this market data. That's always cool. But it's not really surprising because, you know, music travels. It's the universal language. So everyone understands music.
Were there certain playlisting things that started to get the snowball rolling for you?
Not necessarily for my catalog. In 2019, one of my best friends, Tessie, we ended up dropping her project. Behind that one, we did a lot of campaigning, like PR work, and we made some content. And I used to do a lot of playlist work. I discovered Chartmetric, because I was really interested in finding out how these artists was blowing up. So I'm like, let me figure it out. Let me trace the steps. And I got into the playlisting world and what the labels were doing and the stream world. And it's nasty and it's very unreal. Like, a lot of this that you see with artists and these monthly listeners and the playlists, like, Chartmetric lays out curators and playlists, so you can go in exactly and see what playlist this song is on and this song is on. And I did a deep dive into a lot of artists that were blowing up that time, you know, on the labels and stuff. It was fake. Playlists would disappear in 15 days, and they'd be on playlists with songs that just don't, no one's listening to this stuff. But what it was doing, it was boosting the algorithm. It was tricking Spotify into saying that, hey, there's a bunch of people adding this song to playlists, you should add it too. And then the algorithm picks it up and you get on Discover Weekly. Like, I start figuring out the system, like, oh, okay, this is what's happening. It's none of it's real. Which could be very discouraging or encouraging, depending on what side you like to play the game. I was very discouraged because it's like, damn, they're paying for everything and we don't have the capital to pay for everything. So that type of success is like, it's not real. Like, I see what they're doing. But it was also encouraging because it's like, I knew that I didn't have to get that. You know, it also told me that, well, that's 1 million monthly listeners, but those are fake. So maybe if I can get 100,000, I can probably do, you know, well, I can probably make this happen.
Once you're armed with that, how does that change your strategy about setting yourself up?
And it really made me stop putting so much power and investment into that side of it. You know, like, we don't focus on playlisting and we don't focus on, like, the digital space and, like, hiring people to, like, post our shit. Like, it made me really try to cultivate the organic side, like, make great content, make great music, and the people who love it will support it and share it.
Did you lay out a plan for how you wanted to start attacking this, or did it grow organically just day by day?
Yeah, I didn't necessarily lay out a plan. I just kind of moved with the universe. You know, when I was prompted to create, I'd create a bunch of stuff. I've always had a lot of music. A lot of my projects were made within a span of a week to a month. One of them was made the night before, you know, and we released it very soon after. Once I'm in that space and I feel like something needs to happen, we just kind of flow and everyone aligns around me to make it happen.
I noticed that your projects, almost all of them, are sort of co-authored by a producer. Tell me about sort of the strategy and the science behind that.
to me, it just builds cohesion in a grander relationship. Like, I love when albums sound good top to bottom. Like, I don't like being able to skip or having to skip a track. And like, when I work with one producer, we're able to just create and develop a sound, you know, that people associate with a certain time or with a specific tone or album. It's also very easier and more convenient in terms of business. Like, when you actually start handling the business side and having to do the back end and the pub and the sound exchange and the splits, it's so much easier to just work with one person, you know? It simplifies everything.
With a team in place and his vision starting to take shape, LaRussell kept plugging away, building his brand while learning the ins and outs of the music industry. As his audience continued to grow, LaRussell focused on finding creative ways to keep fans engaged. From throwing intimate shows to offering a chance for fans to invest in his catalog, LaRussell offered a personal touch that engendered a deeper connection. Do you handle administration for Good Penny and...
Yep. So myself and Tieta helps me with the admin side in terms of registering pub and sound exchange. But yeah, for a long time, I was just entering everything myself and learning it. You know, we had a moment where I found out about pub and what it actually was and how you actually supposed to do it. And I had to go back through my back catalog and fix a lot of stuff. I had got a book by Ari Herstand called like The New Music Business, and then I bought several others that was just on the music business, and they kind of talk about things like that and the different types of deals. Brent Fias had a segment done where Ty Bisden was talking about how they did splits and how they paid the producers and the contributors, and I thought that was really dope. And I'm like, yeah, if you help on some art, you should probably get a percentage of it, you know? So that just kind of started that, and from there, Nipsey, you know, it just kind of gained momentum, me seeing these different people do business in their ways and realizing that there's no one way to do business. Like, the music business have been like this and have been corrupt by choice. Not by necessity, but literally because people choose to be this way. I just do good on my part. You know, I make sure everyone who's contributing to my art get a split and get a percent. It's very clear and transparent that what we're doing when I build with people, this is how I'm going to split it up. This is the percentage you're going to get, you know, and you get your stuff right away. You're able to see it, you know, like all of my team members have splits so they could see in their accounts, oh, this is what we worked on. This is the percent I got from it. It's coming in, you know.
How did you fund that first project and the first show and all of that stuff?
My job and my pops and the homies, you know, I was working and I was making pretty good money within the aerospace industry, and my pops always worked, so we'd piece up. The homies were always, if they're up here, take this, you know, we all pitched in collectively to make this happen. I invested in a lot of stuff that if you want to start a career in this, you don't have to invest in those things, but for me, we did. And we tried a lot of stuff that failed. You know, we worked with some PR companies that we didn't understand it, and they robbed us, you know, paying for a playlist that's like, oh no, those aren't real. That you shouldn't do that. That's not how it works. And blog posts. So we also like burned through a lot of money just figuring out where I should be putting my money. With me, I'm always doing something bigger. We just redid this backyard out of our own pocket. That costs a lot, and we got the shop now. So we're still not into the black because we're still just in that growth phase. Everything that we make goes back into this.
As you're laying out all of this capital, do you ever feel tempted to want to get into business with a major label or some sort of partner that can offset some of these costs?
Definitely. And this year, like, I've been able to lean on that a lot more. You know, I got a lot of people who want to be a part of it, and I found a way to enable them to where it makes sense for me, and I don't have to give anything I don't want to have to give, and they also don't on their end. So definitely there came that time. And I also allowed the people to invest in me, which is one of the best things. I feel like the people who support you should have the opportunity to make money with you first. So we did the stock and the gold cards where, you know, people are able to make an offer on a percentage of revenue from streaming of a song that they love, and they can offer an amount for it, and then they get that percentage of it, you know, in a perpetuity. So that's a way to bring in capital, and it's capital that's like coming from someone who gets to make that back. You know, if you buy Nikes, you don't make any money back. But if you buy a La Russell song that you listen to every day, you pay yourself, you know?
When people buy these shares, are they getting paid off of the publishing or the writing mechanicals?
The mechanicals. So okay. The streaming royalty, they're getting paid from the distributor.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So no public, I own all my publishing. I don't sell any publishing.
Would you entertain a publishing deal at this point?
I'm not closed off to it, you know, but I'm open. I look at all of these things are like, it's money that doesn't exist, you know? It's money that doesn't exist. Like, if the song doesn't go out, there's no money attached to it. There's no nothing attached to it. So we're just talking percentages of nothing in the beginning.
Is there an amount of each song that you do want to keep for yourself?
No, I have songs where I've literally been to this point, like I've sold every bit of share. I have 1% in it, and everyone else is collecting off of it as well. I have hundreds of songs, so I'm not too attached to having a certain amount of any one. You know, as long as my family and the homies got their share, I'm open to just giving it away. It's a song, and you know, I make revenue off shows and doing things like this. Like the artist, let the art keep doing what art does. You know,
how do you determine the market value of the shares?
I don't. I let people determine that. So, like, sometimes I'll get an offer and it'll say, I want a percent of this song and I'm willing to pay this much. And I'll look at the offer and I'll look at the song. If it's, like, a song that I know is, like, a 20-year song, like a Do That Little Dance where it's like, no, everyone asks about this song when you go see it. I won't accept certain amounts. That doesn't really feel like what my art is worth. But sometimes people reach out for a song that isn't like doing crazy streaming, but it's just a song that they love. And you know, in those moments, it's like, I don't have too much of a scale on any of it. If it feels good, I'll accept it. If it doesn't, I won't.
I know that you also have a similarly disruptive and interesting way that you sell tickets for these shows that you do here in your backyard. Explain how that works.
So that's our new thing. We're doing residencies. It's really beautiful. I don't like setting ticket prices. So originally we started with the slogan, it's not free, it's priceless, where we just remove the price and you come to the door at a show and you determine, you just pay whatever you feel. Whatever you want to pay and you feel like it's worth, you could pay and you could donate throughout the show. After that, I just wanted to go a little bit deeper and provide an even deeper experience. So when people come to my house, like they get to eat for free and they get to chill with my mom and smoke and we just kick back here and we kick it and I perform and you get a show. And I felt like that was worth a little bit more. So now I allow people to make offers on what they'd be willing to pay to come out to the house and have that experience. And we do it kind of like the stock. If it's an offer and it's like, this feels worthy, you know, like I'm investing my family's time and my energy and my home and opening my space. So it's just new. It's allowing people to determine what their experience is worth to them. So we did the first one on June 5th, which was my mom's birthday. So that was like our pilot episode. And it was really great. We had 100 plus people back here enjoying themselves and vibing.
And how did you deal with like working the door and security and sound and all that kind of stuff?
So we handle everything in-house. Like we handle sound, we handle all our own production and the live streaming. And in terms of door, the way that we did it was like, if your offer wasn't accepted, you don't know where it is or have the access to come. So the people who got accepted, they get a special invitation with their membership with the info and everything, and then they just show up and we get to chill and hang out.
Do you come out and interact with everyone?
Yeah, I'm out, and even at my shows, you know, if you come to my shows, I'm on the floor. I'm not usually hiding in the back. Like, I'm around talking, like, I mess with the people who support me. To me, it's like the best thing, you know, like it's where I'm most comfortable. You know, everyone here loves me. So it's just the most comforting and I'm in my zone. If I need to go, I can go in my room and chill and come back. You know, it's the best for me. I'm considering doing like a residency style show in several different cities where it's like, I'll be there, you know, once a month, this is what we're doing. You can come eat and you can come chill and vibe. So I've considered it. I'm not in a rush because, you know, I'm building Disneyland. It's one of those things where, like, you got to plan a trip and you fly out and you come. Like, it's new and it's different, but it's very worth the experience.
Soon, label calls began to trickle in, but it was after a viral freestyle on The Breakfast Club that La Russell found himself inundated with interest by just about every major label. Have you ever had a big idea but lacked the tools to implement it? Look no further than Shopify. Shopify is the brand that powers all your favorite clothing, beauty, and sneaker brands and offers the best-in-class commerce tools to allow you to sell online, in person, and on all major social platforms. Shopify fuels millions of entrepreneurs and turns ambition into action. Check out shopify.com/idea to learn more. Now back to the story.
So I noticed looking at your catalog, it seems like you're increasing the frequency that you're releasing music, like almost every year. What does that do to?
Just me making a lot. I don't want to sit on anything, and I like to really empty myself and share the things that I'm creating. So I'm making a lot more music, which just means I'm going to release a lot more music, you know?
Do you ever worry that you're saturating the market?
Not at all. You can never get enough of the good shit. As long as you enjoy it and you love it, there's no such thing as oversaturation, you know? No one complains about having too much money.
When you're creating, do you have a process?
Not really. It's like, it's that flow state, you know? Like, if I'm feeling it, it's just there. Whether it's a book or a song or a movie, you know? I got movie scripts that I write as well, and those usually happen in a day's time or a few days. Like, once I'm in that state of, like, I know what I want to do or I'm feeling something with music, it usually starts with the beat. Once I have a beat that kind of resonates with me, everything else flows with it. Creating is the easy part. That's the part that's the least worrisome. Like, there's no strategy and you don't have to think about the marketing and how it affects. I just get to create whatever is happening in life. That's what I get to create at that moment. Also do love the business. Like, I love doing good business. You know, I love making creative, innovative new ways to do business, but I don't enjoy the industry's business, you know? So it can be stressful.
What are the most satisfying parts about running the business of LaRussell?
Paying other people. I think that is the greatest part. It's like giving people equity in things they help build and being able to pay people for the things that they've done and just like see people be able to like navigate and live their lives while helping you build your own company.
How far out do you plan your activations, your albums, your events?
Right now, we're kind of mapped for like the next 6 months, but generally it's a day-by-day thing. I make my content in bulk, you know? We'll spend 3 days and end up with 90 pieces of content, and then it's like, okay, I know for the next 3-4 months, I have these pieces to roll out whenever. And then outside of that, I just kind of let life maneuver because, you know, I never know when I'm going to go get a Breakfast Club or LA Leakers or whatever, so I kind of let life flow.
The Breakfast Club and LA Leakers moments were real breakout performances for you. How did you, as an independent artist operating out of Vallejo, end up sitting in the Breakfast Club chair?
Man, great music and being a great person, you know. Charlamagne's was really dope because he's actually, and as well as Justin, those relationships are dope because they're actually really fans of the music. And I think both of those went through Hovain. You know, Hovain sends out my music to people like, you gotta check this out. Hovain is my dog. He helps me on the management side and bringing opportunities in. And just like, we've just kind of cultivated a cool relationship. You know, he loves what I'm doing and he just lends his hand and support where he can.
How did you guys connect?
I went out to New York to meet with Cinematic, with Johnny Shipe's team. And Hovain manages on Cinematic and helps them on that end. So we just met out there. This was last year. All of it is fresh. All of this is fresh, yeah.
Have any other major labels reached out to you?
Just about all of them. Yeah, a good amount. You know, I've had a rep from just about all of them reach out to this.
And what are they talking about?
Nonsense, you know, the typical, like, you know, I think it's one of those things where when something's hot, everyone kind of jumps on. Like, we had one specific day that was a really, really big day, and I got a call from everybody, you know, within in a 4 or 5 hour period of time. But it's the typical mumbo jumbo, the wine and dine, and we could do this, and we're the best at this, and no one can beat our team at this, and it's all bullshit. It's all bullshit.
But you take all the meetings?
I used to. Like, initially I did because I was enamored. You know, I'm an artist, I'm in Vallejo, and it's like, this doesn't happen. People don't get offered by, you know, this person. So I was enamored, but now, not necessarily. Like, if I don't have a reason to, you know, if we're not in the, if the building phase doesn't even feel right, not really. I don't have any interest. Some labels were just here because something went viral or their people were hey, y'all gotta go check this out. They're not even fans. And that's like the instant turn off for me is like, if you're not a fan or familiar with what I'm doing and actually supporting, I really have no interest.
You started by putting yourself in some debt to begin building. Now you're in a place where you're basically covering costs. and paying forward to continue to build. Do you see the light at the end of the tunnel where you will enter into the black and start really making money?
Oh, definitely. And I mean, it's going to be beyond measure. You know, like just the response that we get from the shows and the things that we do. Like, I could get into the black now if I wanted to, but I'm also not very desperate into that. It's not about getting into the black for me. You know, it's really about impact and me just enjoying my own journey and the art that I create, you know, in my life.
I think a lot of people in your position would be, you know, really thirsty to try to convert what they've built into immediate money. What is it about you, do you think, that has made it so that you're just so sort of zen about everything happening in due time?
I've had money and it doesn't make anything too much better. You know, there's things that you can now take care of, but it doesn't really make you feel better. So to me, it's like, once you get that and you understand it, it's not a rush. You know, I'd rather have something that I really cultivated and built and it brings sustainable income that I don't have to feel anxious about losing, you know, or it doesn't come with all these terms that I have to meet and now I have to find ways to validate myself and I have to pitch myself to people. Like, I'm just not interested. And they come in abundance, like when you start to do things that are innovative and new. But like I said, I've gotten offers for like good deals, but they didn't have great people. They were great deals, but the people behind them aren't necessarily always reflective of those deals. They own the team and they're the coach. You don't get to decide who stays and who goes. We don't care that that's your favorite trainer. You work for us, you work for someone. That's a different ball game when it comes to art. When you're pushing art, it's very hard to have an owner. You know, you can't have an owner when you're pushing art. Very difficult terrain to navigate.
To that point, do you find it challenging to wear both hats, being both a creator and also a capitalist, a businessman?
No, because my business principles are very aligned with who I am as a human. I can't offer anyone a bad deal because that's not who I am as a human. It'll be conflicting. But when you get into that world, they're able to do business in ways that they wouldn't treat you as a human because it's just business. You feel me? But to me, nothing is just business. To me, your business is a reflection of your humanity.
Uninterested in the offers he was receiving, LaRussell continued down the indie path until a call from another independent artist changed his outlook. Rapper Russ had been privately corresponding with LaRussell for months as a fan when he decided to reach out and offer him the first spot on his new label, Diamond Records.
Russ was very adamant on helping. He knew my song, he knows the catalog, and he'll tell, man, this bar, and like, he's a fan of the work. When I talk to him, like, he's filled with passion. Like, he often texts me and tell me, reassure me of my greatness, and he allowed me to structure my own deal. Like, he literally asked me, what do I want? Outline it for me, what do I need? Let me know what works for you, and that's what I got.
What were the things that were most important to you?
Ownership. Freedom, like the ability to continue to do what I'm doing. You know, a lot of people want to come in and put you on the schedule and it's like, this is what I need. And it's like, no, he's allowing me to do what I'm doing. He didn't stop what I was building to, oh, let's sit here and let's work on this for 6 weeks. So it was really freedom and ownership that was big to me. He's watching me and he's learning. You know, I'll notice things that he does. It's like, ah, he's seen, you know? And that's a beautiful thing. Like, that's the type of relationship that I want. Like, fan first, and then it's like, let's make some money together if we can. But really, it's just, I just love what you're doing. I just want to help.
And what are the sort of broad strokes of the deal? It's a one album situation?
Yeah, so this is for one project and it's a partnership, 50-50 profit share. And man, it's beautiful because everything that I do before this project, I do completely independently and there's no split, nothing. And then after we get into the same, you know, strokes, we're like back together. It's really him trying to help me, you know, in the way that he can. And this is going to be beautiful because we've yet to see two indies, you know, come together and see if we could have the impact of a major. And we're not even shooting for the impact of the major. We're really two indies helping one another build this infrastructure even bigger and make it seem even more possible. I want to do something special with him, and now I'm just kind of maneuvering and freeing. Like, I like to make my projects in pockets, so when it's that time and he's done with tour and we're like, all right, let's do this.
And he had you open for him recently.
Yeah, Greek Theater in Berkeley. Incredible. Incredible, man. He showed you the tangibility of independence and how real, like, real life is and how fake numbers are. You know, there's artists that are much bigger than Russ in terms of streaming or numbers or analytics, but they're not bigger than Russ in real life, you know? So it's like when you see 8,500 people in real life coming to see one person, it's different. It alters your perspective on, like, what's possible. I've done a show for 5 people, yep. So it's like,
that might,
you know,
be harder, actually.
It's tougher. It's a lot tougher. It's a lot tougher. It humbles you. You got to recondition your mind and think about your entire journey and if you're doing the right thing and, you know, things like that. So 8,500 is a lot more validating because it's like, hey, this proves that you're on the right path, you know?
What was that feeling like of performing songs and seeing that many people familiar with some of your material, and that was probably pretty overwhelming?
It's beautiful to witness in person. Like, we see it online. Like, social media has a way of skewing how we see our own success. You'll have people who get 300 likes on something and they're down about it, when in reality, if 300 people are liking your art, that's pretty exceptional. You know, that's a great thing. If 300 people showed up to your house because they love your song, that's a great thing. But social media has skewed how we view that. So to see it in real life in that abundance is really dope. It's like a culmination of what we've been seeing online.
You were talking earlier about how you approach your content. You shoot a whole bunch of it over a day or 2 days, and then you sort of bank it. How do you think about the strategy for your social handles and, like, how you sort of slate out all of that content?
Man, so I used to just shoot and release things as it's like, it comes in and it's like, let's just release this how I feel today. And then Tieta came in. Tieta's on my team and she's really helped with social media in terms of aesthetic and planning and scheduling. You know, now we use Hootsuite and we get things scheduled ahead of time. And that schedule allows us to also be flexible, because some days I'll wake up and it's like, oh, I want this song today and this is how I feel. So we should put this on YouTube. And she's just really quick about getting things done. You know, this morning I had a clip that I sent and I'm like, I want to post this. I need cat, you know, and it gets done and gets back to me. So we're able to kind of just maneuver and navigate, but also be scheduled to a point to where we're not missing nothing. So I have a map, like, of how, you know, I would break artists. And it starts with, like, great content first. And I would start with the once a week. And then once you can get that cadence, you know, once a week for a month. And then once you can get that, that gives you time to build out the rest of your content, the 3 times a week for 3 months, and then you can go to 6, and till eventually you can get to posting every day. But I think the ideal situation is every day, multiple times a day. Like, people are tuned into your channel. It's like TV programming. If you got great shows on your network, they'll watch your channel all day. So the goal is to just, you know, have great shit on your network all the time. Every time someone turns to my channel, they should be able to smile or have a good time. There's not a such thing as, like, TikTok content and Instagram, Twitter content. Like, great content is great content. Once you format it to fit whatever network you're on, you know, Reels here and regular here and YouTube Shorts and shit, once you get there, it doesn't matter. When we have a great piece of content, it goes viral across all platforms because that's the basis of it. Like, great shit is great shit no matter where it is.
Do you feel like you're achieving musically everything that you want to right now?
Definitely. Beyond everything that I ever could imagine, you know, there's definitely more levels to go. And as we grow, that keeps getting bigger. Like, that one, you know, is turned into 1 million, but definitely far beyond. Like, I make money off music, which is an incredible feat for any artist to be able to make money off of your art.
Where do you want to be in 10 years?
Hopefully in this pergola, chilling and smiling, because I had a successful career and I made it, and I just get to chill. I'm really close to being done recording at the end of this year. Very, very, very close to announcing my own retirement. Very, very close. I'll be nearing 20 albums by the end of this year, and I've gotten a lot of beautiful ideas out, and I put my life energy into this. I've invested a lot. I just want to chill. I live in a situation, and I grew up in a situation where I've been heavily based on, like, hustle and survival and having to do something and having to show up and make things happen. So it's like, now I just want to be able to chill and enjoy life.
Is there anything else that people should look forward to in the next few months from Lil Russell?
It's just a beautiful movie. It's the greatest movie you could see. You know, if you're tuned in, the greatest show you could watch. If you're tuned in, it just gets better and better and better. We got a lot of huge moments coming the rest of the year. There's going to be a lot of incredible content, and I'm only getting better as an artist. The music is getting better. The quality of what we produce is getting better. The opportunities to invest in the shows, is just everything is just being amplified.
Lil Russell's story is a testament of how far one can go by simply following the maxim, one fan a day. Focusing on the prolific output of both his music and his social content, Lil Russell has managed to build an entirely organic and extremely engaged fan base. Of course, being a generational talent on the mic certainly helps, but Lil Russell's success is truly the confluence of his work ethic, his strategy, and his attitude, not to mention a couple bars. Couple those qualities with the innovative relationship he's cultivated with his audience, and you begin to understand why Lil Russell is being hailed as the future of music. Big thanks to our sponsors at Shopify. If you're looking to start your own online store, check out shopify.com/ideas and become your own boss today.